Welcome back to Chronology, your episode-by-episode recap of WWF's Monday Night Raw from episode one until America decides that John Cena is our next president. I think it'll happen any day now. I'm Dave Thackera. I'm more of a casual wrestling fan. That guy over there, he's Neil Trauma. He's what we call the expert of this podcast. Hi, Neil.
Hey, Dave. I think it's more likely that John Cena is elected president than it is that we actually finish this podcast. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
This episode took place, episode 13, on April the 19th of 1993. That was the same exact day that most of America was captivated by the Waco siege. Remember, that was just sort of, we're going to wait outside and see if we can starve him out and down there in Texas. But this was the day that the fire happened and it killed a whole lot of people. And Janet Reno and David Koresh were household names. And Tonight Show monologue material took a very dark turn for about a week and a half. Meanwhile, this was also the same exact time that I, myself, was pumping quarters into an NBA Jam and Street Fighter II arcade machine. 1993 was, let's just say, not a great time for my college savings, but I made it through anyway. What's happening in the wrestling world, April 19th, 1993, Neil?
I was always more of a Mortal Kombat 2 fan myself than Street Fighter, but that's besides the point. In the wrestling world here, I mean, we're a few weeks removed from WrestleMania 9, which, you know, I think pretty much everyone agrees now was a terrible show. Vince still talks about how great it is on commentary, but he's pretty much the only one. And there were a few weeks, I guess, away from the WWF starting the build towards their next pay-per-view, which is not going to be the traditional SummerSlam. It's going to be a show called King of the Ring. But that hasn't happened yet. So instead, we're just watching Raw that's in a holding pattern where apparently the biggest feud in the World Wrestling Federation is Money Inc. versus the Beverly Brothers. So scintillating here. If this is the day of the Waco siege, if this was a 2021 episode, of AEW or NXT or Raw, it would most certainly be destroyed in the ratings by cable news coverage. But luckily for them, cable news wasn't as big of a deal in 1993. And I guess there were probably a few eyeballs on this boring atrocity of a show.
All right. So who's got the belts? Let's set it up that way.
Okay, well, the WWF champion is Hulk Hogan. He has not been seen or heard from since shockingly winning the belt in a match that wasn't even booked at WrestleMania 9. The Intercontinental champion is Shawn Michaels, who retained his championship in a ridiculously booked finish against Tatanka at WrestleMania. He also hasn't been seen or heard from on Raw since WrestleMania. The tag team champions are like the MVPs of Raw because they've been on every week, it seems like, since February. Ted DiBiase and I are Money Inc. And yes, they do have a non-title match here on this show.
Yeah, that's where we start, because it seems like we're taped. Last week was live from Poughkeepsie. This week, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's sort of that show part two.
Definitely taped. They had settled into a live 1 week, taped the next sort of cycle here. This is definitely not only the same, this is the same night. This is Poughkeepsie night two, or later that evening as last week's Raw, for sure.
All right. Well, Vince starts the show with, and don't forget the big non-title match coming up with the Beverly Brothers and Money Inc. Again, if you're hyping up the highlight of your evening being a non-title match, boy, I'm glued to my couch right now, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's 1993, so title matches on TV are a lot rarer than they are now, or most certainly than they would be, you know, a few years after this. But I guess I want to complain about this like you did, but you also can't have it both ways. You can't want your wrestling to act like a sport and then at the same time say that you think the Beverly Brothers should have got a tag team title match here. But I know what you're saying. Like, I mean, anything to put a little bit of juice into this boring ass show they really could have done. Like, it wouldn't have killed them to make it a title match or something, but whatever, I guess.
Well, Macho Man was shown on camera exactly once. Just in case you're keeping track of this at home, he was wearing a pink and rainbow Macho Man outfit today. Think like Lisa Frank folders from middle school, or like Sunny Day cartoons if you're a parent. You know what I'm talking about. But we start with the very first match of the night with the bad guy, Razor Ramon, taking on Virgil. Again, these two, Razor not as prevalent, but between Virgil and Ted DiBiase and IRS, I think those guys have been on like every episode of Raw. So it's no big surprise that Virgil is taking on the first curtain jerk match here.
Yeah, it's like Virgil has most certainly settled into his role as a guy that you know is a jobber. You know he's getting beat every time he comes out. But because he sort of got a push at one point and he has theme music, it's like they can at least pretend that it's a competitive match. But he is the epitome of the jobber to the stars here. And that's what he does here. Like, he hangs in there. This match actually isn't bad.
No, it's a good
match. As far as, it is what it is. It's a star beating up a much, much lesser star. And, it sort of goes through the motions and happens. And it's actually a highlight of this boring show. But, there's really not much to talk about.
But like you said, with these early episodes of Raw, if we get two wrestlers in the ring or two tag teams in the ring, both with their own entrance music, it's remarkable.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't like Basil DeVito or Von Crush or whoever those wacky dudes are that they've been on these shows. So at least he got to hear Virgil's theme song, which actually I think is the best part of the Virgil act, in my opinion.
Not the pants. I like his pants. No big surprise. Razor Ramon wins with a razor's edge. And we move on. After promoting it, they brought it back to us. It was almost like a warning that came true. Match number two, the Giant Gonzalez was seen again, and he's taking on L.A. Gore. Now, again, this is 1993. Bill Clinton is a very new president in the United States, and I gotta believe that this was Vince McMahon's attempt at a very, very bad dad joke that only he really gets. That L.A. Gore is just sort of a reversal of Al Gore.
And yeah, it has to be, right? I mean, that can't be a coincidence. And no, I'm not looking it up. I refuse to look it up. If one of our listeners wants to look it up and tell us, you could. If L.A. Gore actually existed in the wrestling world before Al Gore, please tell us. But I refuse to look it up.
I can't believe that happened. I also can't believe that this is still an 8-foot-tall man wearing an airbrushed bodysuit covered with fake fur, and they're allowing this to happen. Like, no, nobody stepped up at any point when this was happening and says, maybe we should just not do the fake fur. Airbrushed, sure, just not the fake fur.
My assumption is that they spent so much money on the costume that they felt like they needed to justify it by putting it on him, even though it looked terrible.
Okay, well, we've spent way too much time talking about this match already. Giant Gonzalez wins with a chokeslam finisher, and then he just starts screaming at the crowd.
Well, what? I'm going to say something funny, though. I noticed this. I don't know if you picked up on this. Did you notice when Gonzalez is climbing into the ring, all right, the first time they show him, they do the little introduction for Gore, and then they have Gonzalez is coming up the ring steps. And then Harvey Whippleman sprints in, like, as if out of nowhere, and, like, jumps into place next to Gonzalez. Did you notice this or no?
No.
Okay, so that happens. Then about a minute later in the match, one of the two guys, I think it's Savage, says that Gonzalez ran down to the ring. And I can't help but wonder if this idiot actually ran down to the ring for some stupid reason. And that's why Whippleman had a race in to catch up with him. And that's why they didn't show it on TV. I like to imagine that happened because, once again, the show is really boring. So this is the kind of stuff that was entertaining me throughout.
We've spent far, far too much time talking about this now. So, we move on to our next big event, an interview. That sort of wasn't an interview. It's Luna Vachon screaming at the camera once again, gutturally screaming and talking nonsense. It was an effective promo building up her character, I guess. But overall, it was just a couple of minutes of my life that I'd really, really like back. The only thing that I think that might have happened, it might have justified this, is that she was the very first one to tell us that WrestleMania on VHS videotape was going to be on sale on Thursday, right?
That's a pretty quick turnaround. I do have to give him credit for that. Yeah, great. Like, you were not into the Luna and Sherry stuff last week the way I was. I thought that was a really effective segment. And I know you didn't like Luna then, and I'm already, like, turning the corner and going in your direction on Luna. I was already over Luna. Like, once with Luna was enough. If we're going to have this every week, it's going to get old pretty fast. I was pretty sick of this too, but you do get clips of the backstage brawl at WrestleMania, which I could testify was in fact on that video release because, as I mentioned weeks ago when we reviewed WrestleMania 9, I wore that tape out when I was a kid. So I know every moment and every segment, and that is on there. And Sherry does take a pretty sick hit with Luna picks up this. It looks like, I don't know if it's a box of medical supplies or if it's some kind of like instrument, maybe like a rudimentary, I don't know what it would be that you'd have in this big box, but I think it was heavier than Luna thought it was going to be. And she picks it up and smacks it off of Sherry's back. And it just falls to the ground. It doesn't bounce. It just hits her in the back and plops to the ground. And Sherry is tough as nails because that actually looked like it was brutal. And I've always noticed that when I used to watch that tape, like up to now, that was a brutal shot. So at least we got to see it on television, not just on the videotape.
That's burned into your memory.
It is. I'm not embarrassed. Not embarrassed to this, Dave. Maybe I'm a little embarrassed.
You should be. Match number three. Tatanka, still unbeaten, taking on a man named Mark Thomas. A squash match. I got nothing.
This is the point where I was like done with this show.
I got nothing on this. I mean,
we said this before we hit record. First of all, we write notes to each other back and forth, so we know what we're going to talk about on this podcast. And I read through Dave's notes, which were essentially squash match, Tatanka wins. And I literally had nothing else to add of my own. And that's 100% what this was. Squash match, Tatanka wins. Like, I'm in shock that this podcast has lasted longer than 10 minutes at this point. What happens next?
Match number three, the main event that we brought you here for, that we've been promoting since last week, the Beverly Brothers taking on Money Inc. Now, before anything really happened, Money Inc. made their way to the ring. The Beverlys made their way to the ring. And before any action really happened, they're trying to promote this. They're trying to talk it up. They're trying to create the stir and set the scene. And then as soon as action happens and four guys are in the ring, Vince McMahon says, and I quote, I wrote this down, I rewinded it many times so I get the quote exactly right. Vince McMahon, quote, look at this. They're going at it. All four individuals, and no one really cares who wins this matchup, I don't think. Vince McMahon, the owner of the company, on a pre-recorded bit, uses the words, and no one really cares who wins this matchup, I don't think. Truer words were never spoken.
I mean, I think his point was that it was heel versus heel, so there was no fan favorites in the match. But that's really funny.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That could be the tagline of Raw in 2021 for certain. WWE Raw. Nobody really cares who wins.
I'm so invested in this match. And you know me, I take copious notes. I was out of this by the end of it. I can't tell you who won the match. I have no idea. I can't even remember anything that happened in it.
Money Inc. won. I think it was DiBiase, but one of them rolled up one of the Beverlys when the Beverlys, these two knuckleheads, bonked into one another, which is exactly what got them into this feud in the first place, was screwing up the spot with Scott Steiner and bonking into the Money Inc. guys. So it did come full circle, and you got to almost think this was the end of the Beverlys, because I thought they were going to even do a breakup angle off the loss, but that is what happens. Money Inc. of course wins. Thank God, because if they had lost, then that would have set up a rematch, but thank God Money Inc. wins and we can move on to other things in our life.
Well, the next thing that happened, Vince McMahon in the center of the ring with a microphone coming out and introducing the People's Champion to us. Now, he's not talking about Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That would come many years later. He's talking about Bret the Hitman Hart. Now, Neil, here's my favorite section of the entire episode that we do. It's called Let Me Ask You Something.
All right.
Neil, let me ask you something. The People's Champion is one of those trademarks that me, as a wrestling fan during the Attitude Era, I associated very clearly with The Rock. Now, he's throwing around that term for Bret Hart right now. And he's basically, the interview goes in the direction of, Bret, you know, you were the champion and you're always the underdog going into matches. That makes you the people love you, the people's champion. Bret, how does that make you feel knowing that you might never get another title shot? How often do they recycle gimmicks like that where it's like they're not just throwing around the term randomly in the middle of a match and then forgetting about it? Like, this is very clearly attached to Bret Hart. A big name, one of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. How often do they decide that recycling gimmicks like that is a good idea?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to accept the premise of the question, first of all, because Brett being the people's champion here is very different than The Rock, because when The Rock did it, and we'll get to this point in a couple of years, The Rock did it kind of, he did it as a heel thing. The Rock was like a really big heel that was full of himself and thought everyone loved him. So when The Rock coined the people's champ, that was actually a heel thing. And It was just years later when he actually got really popular that it was true. He was the people's champ because everybody loved him. But The Rock's thing was a heel thing. This is just more of, I think, and I thought this absolutely listening to the interview, Vince already has serious buyer's remorse about what they did at the end of WrestleMania 9. This is like, so Hogan's the champ. We screwed up. We've got to at least let everybody know that Bret Hart is still our number one babyface. So we're going to call him the champion of the people. And we're going to hope and pray that when it actually gets to the point that we give Bret another title shot, everybody's into him winning it again, because we really screwed up doing what we did at WrestleMania. That's what I got out of this. And even in the interview, if you noticed, and this is the only part of the show that I actually kind of popped for because it felt really hot, Brett is naming off his hit list of guys that he's going to come after. You know, he wants revenge on Yokozuna. He wants revenge at Lex Luger because they did an angle at WrestleMania. And he even mentions that he's coming for the immortal Hulk Hogan. And the fans pop, and I popped. And it's really sad that we're never going to get that match. But this was the first hint that they might be building to Brett and Hogan at some point in the future. And that would have been fun.
Well, they also made reference to Jack Tunney, who is going to investigate the attack from Lex Luger on Bret Hart during the morning of WrestleMania 9. Again, we're straddling that line of trying to take ourselves seriously as a real thing, but having some guy launch an investigation into a clearly staged and clearly scripted attack. Who is Jack Tunney? Why are we throwing his name around like he's Roger Goodell or something?
Okay, so Jack Tunney is the figurehead president of the WWF. He was a mainstay in this era, the 80s into the early 90s. Who he is in real life, he was the promoter in Toronto of the Toronto territory. And when Vince did his big expansion and he took over all the territories, he would generally throw jobs to a lot of these guys. And somehow or another, Tunney became the figurehead president of the WWF. And in real life, I think he was still promoting and had a role in the WWF in Canada. And his shtick, see, when I was a kid, I always took it seriously because it was kind of like 1960s Batman, where when you're a kid, you think this is all like serious. But then when you actually rewatch it as an adult, you realize that the gimmick was that Jack Tunney was like this bumbling buffoon of a president. And like, he always took himself way too seriously. Like, he literally was, if you watch a lot of Jack Tunney, he was Commissioner Gordon in the 1960s Batman, where he's the only person who actually takes himself and his authority seriously. But they pushed him as the figurehead president. And the investigation here isn't so much into did Lex Luger attack Bret Hart, because obviously he did. It's on tape. The investigation is into why Luger's forearm knocks everybody out. And if you remember at WrestleMania, that's a thing. Savage and Heenan, when they get into their little scuffle at the announce desk at WrestleMania, that's what it's about. And this will lead somewhere with the Lex Luger character. So actually, the whole thing with Luger and the forearm and Bret and all this is, it is going somewhere. It's somewhere that's going to drastically change course, as all of our listeners who watch this era know, but it is going somewhere.
Oh, I can't wait now. All right. Well, match number 4 happened after that, and it was Bam Bam Bigelow versus some dude named Phil Apollo.
Your old buddy Bam Bam.
Yeah. Let's not bring that up. But of our 4 matches that are on this episode of Raw, we've got Virgil and Ramon, Razor Ramon, which was a pretty good match. Followed by two squash matches with Tatanka and Giant Gonzalez winning, followed by a competitive match, followed by another squash match. So I guess 5 matches actually happened, and more than half of them were just squash. Oh, it's an hour of my life that happened, and now we're here again.
Well, see, I mean, I agree with you. This I think this was the most boring one we've ever watched. Like, and I'm shocked that we've made the podcast go this long. Like, if our listeners actually paid money for this, I feel like we should have refunded them. But I actually didn't hate this. I'm not predisposed to hate Bam Bam Bigelow like you are. So I thought this was a fun little squash. And it actually would have been a cool thing to get him over as a monster heel because he wins. Then he keeps beating up the guy after because he's not only a monster, but he's also a dick. And then instead of making it actually like a meaningful angle, like send out refs, send out security because you've got to pry this evil Bigelow off. No. We're going to send out the dancing fat guy in a monk costume because that's what this show needed.
During the match, Doink the Evil Clown showed up with an umbrella. Didn't really get an explanation. At the end of the match, Friar Ferguson shows up and mixes it up with Bam Bam Bigelow. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why this is the way that you end the show.
I don't know why Doink and the Friar needed to be involved here at all. Although, I mean, I hate to tell you this either, spoiler alert, but Doink and the Friar and Bam Bam are actually going to be intertwined in a lot of storylines through the rest of 1993.
Oh.
And I can't believe they're planting the seeds already for it. But yeah, that was unnecessary. You could have actually been making something out of Bigelow here instead of making it like a joke. But like I mentioned on last week's show, I'm pretty sure this is the last we're ever going to see of this incarnation of the Friar Ferguson. He comes out and blesses the jobber and then does a little fat guy dance because why not?
But this is where, just in case there was any doubt in your mind if it was the same show as last week, it's definitely the same show as last week, and we know this because Friar Ferguson had the same I cut myself shaving bit of toilet paper stuck to his chin in last week's episode.
Did he not take that off? Did. Like, there was nobody backstage that could say, hey, buddy, take that off your chin?
Jeez. Nope.
But you know what, Dave? I don't want to get you unnecessarily excited here at the end of the show. Because I don't know this for sure. We're going to find out next week. I'm pretty sure I'm right, though. I think this is the last show for Rob Bartlett.
Oh, Neil. Oh,
he
I can't
maybe,
wait now.
Maybe is at the next cycle. But if not, this is it.
Episode 13 has come and it's gone. Put a bow on it for us, Neil. What kind of closing thoughts you got?
Oh, man. I mean, what kind of closing thoughts could you have? This is generally a really boring episode of Raw. It sort of plants the couple little seedlings for what we're going to see down the line with Lex Luger and Bam Bam Bigelow. And actually, even we didn't note this during the match, but Razor Ramon gets a nice little pop coming out. So I wonder if they're going to think about turning him babyface down the road. As far as an MVP goes, I'm going to go with the Hitman because Bret Hart coming out and doing an interview is like the only normal human being and the only person anyone could possibly care about really on this show. So my MVP is Bret Hart. My closing thoughts are that the show is boring and I hope it gets better soon. What do you think, Dave? Ditto?
No, I thought your second part is right. Yes, I hope the show gets better soon, and this episode kind of sucked. But my MVP this week going to go to Mr. L.A. Gore, because if he spends minutes in the ring with Giant Gonzalez, I'm going to give you a vote of confidence many years after the fact. L.A. Gore, you are my MVP, and I'm pretty sure that's the last time we will hear that name on this podcast.
I didn't see that one coming, but hey, you know what? It was the day of the Waco siege, so L.A. Gore's pretty topical. Why not?
Hey, Neil, where can people find us?
They can find us at Place to Be Nation in the Place to Be Nation Pro Wrestling feed. They can also find us on Spotify or wherever fine podcasts are distributed. Find us on Facebook or just Google Chronology, and you will find yourself listening to the show in no time.
This has been Chronology, your episode-by-episode recap of Monday Night Raw, where we patiently wait for the show to get good, and it does. I know it does. We're just not there yet. Thanks for listening.